Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, bitches? Oh boy, we got a big day today. I don't even know where the fuck to begin, to be honest with you. But we got the results of the Iowa caucus. We got good news. We got bad news. We got in-between news. We got funny news. We got happy news. We got sad news. Am I repeating myself at this point? If not, I'll keep going. Later on, we have Alex Jones decides to destroy the little bit that's left of his reputation. Mr. Anti-establishment himself likes to tear down the most anti-establishment candidate because he's an idiot, spoiler alert. Then we got Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty stumping hard for Ted Cruz and calling for genocide and whatnot. You think I'm exaggerating, but you'll hear the exact quote that I'm referring to later on. Sarah Palin loses her shit when she's actually asked a real question about some of the garbage that comes out of her mouth. And a very, very important story later on that we tried to get to recently, but we didn't have the time yet, and I didn't have the ability to give it its due diligence and give it, you know, the full context necessary. But we have a really, really important and good story. Well, not the content isn't good, but it's important for education purposes, of just how fucked over women are around the world. It's more than probably you even think. So for those who are anti-feminism, you know, perhaps you want to be a little bit more specific and a little bit more rational about that belief. And I say myself, man, I'm against what's called third wave feminism because I don't think they make good arguments. In fact, I think they make shitty arguments and they're wrong a lot. But in terms of just traditional feminism, no, it's still absolutely necessary in probably a majority of the world, and women are just simply not treated equal, and I will break that down for you in great detail. I'll give you just a waterfall of fucking facts drop on your face. All right, let's get started here, and I mean, what are we going to do? Not start with the Iowa caucus? I believe that we're obligated to do that. Okay. We're going to go party by party here, and we'll kick it off with the Republicans. So we have the results in from the Iowa caucus last night, and it was an incredible night. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It was exciting. There are some people who were surprised at some of the results. I indeed wasn't, and this is something that I'll get to a little bit later. But nonetheless, it was still a very impressive and interesting night. So first of all, let's start here on the Republican side, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. Ted Cruz won. That's the big news of the night. He received 51,666 votes. That translates to 8 delegates. You have Trump, who came in second with about 45,500 votes. That's 7 delegates. You have Marco Rubio coming in just behind Trump with about 43,000 votes, so that's another 7 delegates for him. Then Ben Carson actually did decent. I mean, I guess you could say better than expected. He got 17,395. That translates into 3 delegates. And then you have Rand Paul, who beat out all the other losers here, and he got about 8,500, which translates into 1 delegate. And Bush as well got 5,200, which translates into 1 delegate. And then the people with 0, Carly Fiorina, John Kasich, Mike Huckabee, Chris Christie, Rick Santorum, and Jim Gilmore, who, I kid you not, got a grand total of 12 votes. A lot of people didn't even know who the hell he was. He was in the recent Fox News undercard debate, and he even said to the moderator, like, yeah, I'm not doing anything in Iowa. I wanted to start my campaign in New Hampshire. Well, I hate to tell you there, Jim, you're also not going to get any votes there. It's amazing that this guy thinks he's relevant in any way, shape, or form. So In terms of the overall results, like I said, I wasn't really surprised by it. In fact, I predicted it. So people were asking me for a while, and they were asking me on Twitter yesterday what I thought was going to happen in the race, and I said the Dem race is 50-50 for the GOPers. Trump has a 5-point lead in the polls going into it, but I think it's going to be Cruz. Iowa went for Santorum and Huckabee the last two times, and that's telling. For those of you who listen to the live show, then you know that I actually came out with my prediction that Cruz was going to win about a week or so ago, and I've always been 50-50 on the Democrats because the polls are all over the place. Some had Bernie winning, some had Hillary winning, and it just seemed like it was going to come down to the wire. Now, I also said on yesterday's show that I thought that this was how the election was going to go. Let's take a look at that.
My prediction is that you'll probably have Cruz win, and then Trump and Rubio will be close behind, and then everybody else, it's a toss-up. Who the fuck knows where they're going to finish. Now, on the Democratic side, it really is a coin flip. I mean, it's basically 50-50. When you look at all the polls, you see some polls Hillary's winning, some polls Bernie Sanders is winning.
Now, again, we're going to get to the Democrats in a little bit, but sticking with the Republicans here, you have a lot of establishment pundits who are surprised by this. You have a lot of people who, in my opinion, are prematurely and perhaps stupidly dancing on Donald Trump's political grave. And this is all unnecessary and all inaccurate and misleading. So people were telling you going into this that, well, it's already over and Donald Trump is going to win. That's not true. I was predicting a Cruz win, and I had good reason to predict a Cruz win. And now that he has won, people are blowing it out of proportion, and they're saying, oh, no, now, see, now this is something where everybody's really got to look out for Cruz. He has a fantastic shot at the nomination. Pump your brakes. There's a little bit of a counterintuitive takeaway from Cruz winning Iowa. I mean, to your standard observer who doesn't follow politics closely, they might think, well, oh, this means he's really viable. I'm actually this close to declaring that Ted Cruz is over and done with. Again, you're probably like, well, he just won. That doesn't make any sense. No, but you have to look at history, and you have to realize that the past two election cycles, the person who won Iowa not only didn't go on to get the nomination, they went on to get absolutely crushed. And that, again, is Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee, because Iowa is ultra-evangelical, the Republican base there is super far right-wing, and they just don't have their finger on the pulse of not only the rest of the country, but even the rest of the Republican Party. As much as I disagree with them and as extreme as I think they are, Iowa evangelicals and Republicans are a special breed of that, where they have this knack for really not picking winners in modern times. Now, when you go back to the Bush years, they did get that one right. But when you look at modern times with Huckabee and Santorum, not only were they wrong, they were dead wrong. So I don't think that this means that, hey, Cruz is the guy you have to look out for now. I still think Donald Trump is the front runner and it's his race to lose, as all of the national polls say, and as almost all the polls in all the other states say. And I actually think that the person who came in third, Marco Rubio, he's what I like to call the establishment fallback candidate, which means that he's the person that's going to get all the big money from here on out moving forward, especially since Jeb Bush ate a big bag of dicks at the Iowa caucus, and especially since John Kasich did horrendous as well, and Chris Christie. So the establishment has to pick somebody. Marco Rubio is that guy. But, again, a weird takeaway from this, if Marco Rubio indeed wants to be successful and overtake Trump, he's going to need to pump his brakes a little bit. And what I mean by that is he's got to stop appealing to the way far right fringe of the Republican Party. He has the ability to just play that Mitt Romney role, play that John McCain role, and play the who else are you going to vote for card, because I have the best shot against the Democrats and I'm more sane than everybody else. But he's actually been doing the opposite in recent days. He's been trying to get more conservative and more evangelical, and it's God this, God that, God everything. Let's put more people in Guantanamo. Let's do more war. And that's the exact wrong direction if he wants to be successful and get the nomination and then have a shot in a general election. So, and again, this goes directly against all of the wisdom that's happening from the Republican strategists right now, who are all begging Marco Rubio to go even further right, because they look at Trump and they say, well, you've got to outright wing Trump and seem more conservative, and you got to override the fact that your last name is Rubio. But that's the exact wrong direction to go in if he wants to have a shot. So, again, let's review here real quick. Don't take much away from this Cruz win, and don't say that Donald Trump's chances are done. That's just simply not the case. You have to be a poll denier to come away with that conclusion. And you have to remember, he has a gigantic lead nationally, a gigantic lead in most of the states that are coming up. And he was kind of already expected to lose Iowa. At least I thought he was going to lose Iowa. Why? Because the fucking guy has clips online of him saying how stupid are the voters in Iowa, because he had no ground game in Iowa whatsoever, because he says shit at religious universities like 2 Corinthians, am I right over here? They can see through it. The people who are really super religious and right-wing go, eh, he's more of the businessy kind of pseudo-conservative with the big ego, and that's not my thing. I'm more of a Cruz guy. So people are making a big deal out of this. They shouldn't. Donald Trump isn't done, and Cruz is not the front runner now, and it's not like he's going to be super viable. Huckabee and Santorum won the last two times in Iowa, and we know how that worked out for them. Rubio definitely positioned himself as the establishment fallback candidate here, and you could basically say Jeb Bush and John Kasich are donezo, and Chris Christie, and they were the other potential establishment fallback guys, not anymore. And Trump still has that gigantic lead. So you have to keep all that stuff in mind and keep it all in perspective here. But there's your general breakdown. The Iowa caucus went not how other pundits thought it would go, but how I thought it would go. Okay. Now we go to the Democratic side. And dare I say it, ladies and gentlemen, there is some fuckery afoot. To steal a phrase from, I think Joe Rogan came up with that first, or maybe he took it from somebody too. Who knows? Now, on the Democratic side of the Iowa caucus, my prediction was spot on. The race was so incredibly close that with 98% of the precincts reporting, Hillary had just a 0.2% lead over Bernie. Now, actually, just before I came on air here, about an hour or so before I came on air, you have a bunch of different news outlets, including the Associated Press and CNN, calling it for Hillary Clinton. So we didn't have an answer all night, although Hillary Clinton was sitting on like a 0.2%, 0.4% roughly lead virtually the entire time. Bernie started a few points back, and then he just charged the rest of the night. And by the time I went to sleep, he was only back by 0.2%. So it was a nail biter. And like I said, it went almost exactly as I predicted here. To give you the breakdown, in terms of delegates, you have Hillary Clinton with 28 and you have Sanders with 21. In terms of what they call SDEs, Clinton has 701 and Sanders has 697. Now, Martin O'Malley dropped out of the race, which is perhaps unsurprising, although I don't know why he didn't drop out earlier. If he knows anything about polling, he should know that he ain't going to override this tremendous mountain of a problem that's in front of him, no matter how much he wants to do wishful thinking. So he dropped out fairly quickly at the beginning of the night, but he could have spared himself the embarrassment of failing miserably in the Iowa caucus here. Now, there's a bunch of eyebrow-raising stuff that happened. So the New York Daily News reports the following about this lead that Clinton had. Quote, Hillary Clinton won 6 back-to-back coin tosses against opponent Bernie Sanders' camp at a half dozen Iowa precincts where voting results were too close to call, a mathematical feat that raised eyebrows and a few questions. The 1 in 64 odds of Clinton successfully winning 6 coin flips across Polk, Jasper, Cedar, and Johnson counties during a deadlocked Iowa caucus prompted critics of the former Secretary of State Drew Rumbles on social media, where some questioned the logic of deciding the country's next president with a game of chance. Yeah, what the fuck? So, understand that this actually is written in the rules of the Iowa caucus. And when people bring up objections to this kind of stuff beforehand, you have party officials saying, well, look, I mean, this is just something that it never really comes down to that because it's never really that close, and the chances of us even having to go to a position like that or do something like that are slim to none, so don't worry about it, and let's just move along here and conduct the proceedings. And it just so happened that not only did they rely on that, it may have decided the election, and Hillary won 6 coin flips in a row? I'm going to go ahead and let you draw your own conclusions based off that. Now, to give you some more specifics on the kind of night that we had, Bernie Sanders won 84% of people under the age of 30 and 58% of people in the age bracket of 30 to 44. Now, Hillary Clinton won primarily with older voters here. But what this shows you is that moving forward, if Bernie Sanders is going to have any chance, he's going to need young voters to be energized and to get out there and to vote. So let me show you one more video on the outcome here so you get a sense of just how screwy the situation was. This is from MSNBC.
Final count number was so much lower than the original attendance number that they had allocated an extra delegate. And so to determine who would get that extra delegate, they had a coin toss. This happened at least in a precinct in Ames, Iowa, a precinct in West Davenport, and a precinct in Des Moines. In each one of these coin tosses, I think you're seeing some video of one of them there. In each one of these coin tosses, Hillary Clinton's side won.
What?
So take a look. Three. If she lost those three coin tosses, she would have 671 right now. If Bernie Sanders won those three coin tosses, he would have 672 right now. Bernie Sanders would be leading right now. And if you think that's a trivial difference, Bernie Sanders was dying, I bet you, in that speech to say, I'm leading right now. He almost could have said it, and with the flip of a coin, he could have said it.
So, look, may I just 673.
God, my math is terrible. 673.
You're saying there were three delegates who were awarded on the basis of a coin toss. All three went to Hillary Clinton, and that's part of the reason that she technically looks like she's leading right now. That's absolutely nuts.
Yes. And there are more. These are reports. So far you have the Des Moines Register has found one of these. Yahoo News has found two more, including the video that we were showing you there. These are basically anecdotal reports. There could be more across the state. This is something the Iowa Democratic Party was saying. It's an arcane procedural thing. It never happened. Don't worry about it. Now it's happened three times, and it is literally affecting the outcome.
It happened six times. That was in the middle of when it was going on, and there were three instances at the time. There were some caucus sites where people were literally sent home. Look, there are going to be a lot of people on both sides of this on social media, and what I'm already sensing from the Bernie supporters is this overwhelming sensation of, we were fucked, this isn't fair, this is rigged. This is a problem. Let's do some sort of recount. There's a massive problem with that, though. You can't do a recount in a caucus. The way it works, it is quite literally impossible to do a recount. They actually count the people in front of them at the time. Which is, again, quite old school and a little bit ridiculous, but, you know, you got to do a caucus instead of the primary because tradition and stuff. These are the arguments that people make. But since that's the case, you have to accept the reality for what it is, and we can continue to give you the facts and let you know that indeed there was some fuckery afoot, and people were indeed screwing people over, and there's quite a bit of anecdotal evidence to point in that direction. But no matter what we say, and no matter how much we uncover it, it doesn't look like there's going to be a solution to it. So instead of us all piling on and saying, boo-hoo, woe is us, the establishment is against us, you know what you have to do? You have to say, fuck that, now we're going to try even harder. How about we make it so that with your little tweaks around the edges, we still override it and overcome it because it ain't even going to be a close election where it's within 0.2%. If we win by 18 points in the next primary, what are you going to do? How are you going to override that one? How are you going to, you know, perhaps bias the Iowa Democratic Party in your favor in order to... So you have to... Don't live in denial. You have to accept the official outcome for what it is and then use that as motivation moving forward. I know everybody rolls their eyes when they hear me talk about Tiger Woods, but there's a good point to bring up in this context about the way he responds to stuff like this. In, I believe it was 2006, his dad passed away, and you had pundits and sports commentators all over the place saying, well, that's it, he's never going to be the same. Like, oh, his dad was his only motivation for golf, got him involved in it, he loved his dad so much, he essentially was doing all this for him, it's a big part of his life, he's going to be emotionally distraught, he's never going to be the same, he's never going to win again, he's never going to do this, he's never going to do that. What happened? The first major where he came back, he not only lost, he missed the fucking cut. That's, for those of you who don't know, Tiger Woods did not fucking miss cuts in his prime. That's ridiculous, okay? But then people kept piling on. It was like, see, we were right! Just like David Hillary. See, Hillary's going to win! See, we were right! We were right! And then what did Tiger do? He literally went on to win 7 tournaments in a row. For those of you who know golf, you know that that's basically impossible. Golf is not a sport that you can dominate and win tournaments back-to-back. He won 7 in a row and shut those pundits the fuck up to the point where they're like, okay, point taken. Well, now here with Bernie, we have some facts that are good where we could talk about, oh, he did so well among young voters. He had no ground game in Iowa not that long ago, and now he virtually tied Hillary Clinton, if not won, with all those fucking weird coin flips that went on. Yeah, that's all nice. But looking forward, we have to say, oh, so the establishment really is going guns blazing against Bernie. That's interesting. Now watch me do what I do. Watch, a wave of young support come out for him. And guys, look, I'm not going to bullshit you here. When it comes to New Hampshire, Bernie is leading by quite a bit. Now, does that mean, you know, Bernie supporters in New Hampshire should sit back, relax, and have a Corona and act like they don't have to do shit? No, you better get your ass to the polls and vote. But once you go beyond New Hampshire, look, Bernie's down 10 points nationally. He doesn't have as much support in the other states. He hasn't even been able to spend as much time in many of the other states. So, being that people haven't heard his message, don't all know who the fuck he is, there's a media that's biased against him, you got a lot of fucking work to do, man. You got a lot of work. You think it was easy for Tiger Woods to win those 7 tournaments after his dad died and he's emotionally distraught and everybody's saying, it's over, he's done, forget it. No, but he did it anyway. He buckled down and worked hard and fought, and he got the fucking job done. Are you going to do that? Are you going to fight? Are you going to spread the message? Are you going to donate $5 or $10 or $20 to Bernie Sanders' campaign? You have to use this as fuel. That's what you have to do. You can't just sit back and say, well, you know, it's rigged. The establishment is so against us that there's no way it can happen. No, you have to make it happen. You have to fight for it and work hard and will it into reality. So that's the general takeaway from this. Now, it's yet to be seen what the media narrative is going to be. I mean, I was of the belief that if Bernie won, the media would be forced to cover him. And would have been forced to take him seriously. With what is a virtual tie and fishy circumstances to get to that position, how are they going to cover him now? I don't know, but I don't think the establishment media has a record of being kind to Bernie Sanders or open-minded about his chances. They scoffed at him from day one. They're continuing to scoff at him, even though he's already exceeded expectations. So we can't rely on them to give facts or information or data or talk about what's happening here. So it's all on you, is what it is. And you have to accept that reality, and you have to move forward with that in mind. And you have to realize that nothing that was worth it was ever easy. So even though there's some fishy stuff going on behind the scenes, even though there's quite a bit of anecdotal evidence pointing in that direction, you can't override it at this point. You have to accept the fact that you lost this one and that you're down in many of the next states, save New Hampshire. And you have to push through to manifest into reality what you want to manifest into reality. Now, I have to take a break. But when we come back, I'm going to discuss the biggest losers in Iowa, and then we'll get into all the clowns around this election. You have conspiracy idiot Alex Jones is going to make up malicious lies about Bernie. You have Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty, who stumps for Ted Cruz and calls for genocide. And you have Carly Fiorina, who violated her own very strict moral code in a hilarious way. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. son of a bitch. We're back. All right, guys. Let's, let's talk a little bit about The Biggest Losers. Not the show, but in Iowa, in the Iowa caucus. Let's discuss the biggest losers in Iowa, and there are a lot of them. So first of all, we have Martin O'Malley, Mr. Plastic Man himself, dropped out almost immediately when the results started rolling in, because his numbers were beyond abysmal. And he should have known that beforehand. And this is one of the main reasons why he's one of the biggest losers. I have nothing against him personally. I think he's an incredibly fake politician, as evidenced by the way he talks and the way he acts. But in terms of the ideas that he throws out there and the policy specifics, he's actually not bad. In fact, if it came down to him and Hillary Clinton, I would almost certainly vote for Martin O'Malley. But apparently he's a math denier, and he thought he could overcome a 7 quadrillion point deficit coming into Iowa, and then he immediately realized, oh, this is embarrassing, and he dropped out. He should have dropped out beforehand, man. Martin O'Malley is the kind of guy who would have made a fantastic politician in the late 1980s, early 1990s, when people bought into that fake politician rhythm and cadence. Actually, I should be clear, when people on the left bought into that fake politician act, people on the right still buy into it. Look who won on the Republican side in Iowa. Ted Cruz, the epitome of that as well. So it's sad. It's sad. Goodbye, Martin, but you knew this day was coming and you hung on a little too long here. Now, Huckabee is one of the biggest losers as well. He also dropped out via Twitter, which tells me that he couldn't even fill a room of real grassroots support. So now Huck can, of course, go back to being a huckster and hawking fake cancer cures and diabetes cures, which, again, is literal. These are things he would sell his email address to different companies that would then push out their products, their unproven products, with his name attached to it. He's like, sure, no problem. Put my name and attach it to a company that pretends like Bible verses and myrrh cure cancer? Yeah, why not? Fuck it. He's a deeply unethical guy, and people apparently are seeing through it at this point. He did well the last time he ran, but it's just not the case anymore. Now, another tremendous loser is Carly Fiorina, who dipped on her own party to avoid a non-existent snowstorm. Which again tells me she has so little support that she couldn't even muster up a party for Iowa. There were pictures from a reporter of the empty room that was supposed to have her party at that moment, but she did so terribly and she was so embarrassed that she pretended like a storm was coming and she left Iowa. And then we also have Santorum, who still hasn't dropped out yet for inexplicable reasons. Actually, I should bite my tongue on that. Maybe I missed an article or something within the past 2 hours. But within the last 3 hours, like I saw he didn't drop out yet. He should drop out now. In fact, he should have dropped out, the same night of the Iowa caucus, or well before that, if we're being serious here. And he actually spent, this is the saddest part, a lot of time on the ground in Iowa. Still generated virtually no support, even though he had won Iowa in the past. That's so sad. And then I saved King Sad himself for dead last year. Jeb! ! Okay, what happened with him? Well, listen to this. Quote, despite spending nearly $65 million so far, Right to Rise, the super PAC supporting Jeb Bush, saw little return on its investment Monday night. The former Florida governor came in sixth place with a little more than 5,000 votes, which works out to be a bit less than one vote per $12,000 in spending. But Bush's super PAC still has $59 million in the bank. Okay, this is one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. When you look at races for the House of Representatives and for the Senate, money basically determines who wins. It's that simple. it's over 93% of the time that the person who raises the most money ends up winning. And then naturally, when they're in power, it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So they get donations from corporations and billionaires and rich folks, and then they turn around and do favors for them and screw over their constituents. When it comes to the presidential election, it's a little bit different because the media is required to cover you to a certain extent either way. So since your name is getting out there a little more no matter what, then the money isn't as important. It's still important, don't get me wrong, and it still serves that function of when somebody gets elected and they took X amount of money from their contributors, they're going to help out those contributors. That is legalized bribery. So it's still very important in that respect. But it's not the one-to-one relationship when it comes to a presidential election where simply the person who raises the most money is guaranteed to win. Doesn't work like that. And Jeb is the perfect example of that. Dude, it doesn't matter how much money you raise, that money doesn't also raise your personality with it. I mean, I would rather watch fucking paint dry than listen to a Jeb Bush speech. Call it what it is, man. He's an entitled, pampered little prick. That's what he is. He's got the last name Bush. His daddy was president. His brother was president. And he was a governor. And he's like, I think it's my turn, guys. Can I have my very own country, Papa? No, bitch, you can't. We're tired of it. We're tired of the passing back and forth, back and forth. And actually, I should bite my tongue here because the Republicans are tired of it. Doesn't look like the Democrats are because Hillary won kind of the Iowa caucus here. So, you know, I would question those particular Democrats in terms of how issues-based they are if they're picking Hillary when they have the opportunity to stand with Bernie. But there you have it. They're your biggest losers. And I'll throw an honorable mention here in as well for Ben Carson. Because Ben Carson, though he actually didn't do poorly in the polls. I mean, you had Ted Cruz number one, Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, and then I think it was Ben Carson. But the reason why I'm throwing his name out there is he left before the caucus ended. And you know what his reason was? I have to go back to Florida to get some clothes. I'm out of fresh clothes. What? I think it was on HuffPost. There was an article where they said, still no word on how laundromats or washers and dryers are doing in Iowa. What, apparently every single machine is broken? You can't stay there and do it? No, I forgot something. I don't know. I just want to get the fuck out of here. I'll be back / not really. I got to go. Fuck the Iowa caucus. And he still didn't do as poorly as a lot of the other people. So an honorable mention for him for biggest fail, even though that's really not a biggest fail. But everybody else, it's on another level of fail. Okay, now we go to Alex Jones, and I'll try to contain myself here as I do my commentary, but could get out of hand just a tad. Conspiracy idiot Alex Jones is going to make up malicious lies about Bernie Sanders here. Let's watch.
With the Democrat race, I think those polls are basically correct. I think that's up for grabs. I think it's a jump ball, and I'll tell you what, I would love nothing better than to see Bernie Sanders take a victory here in Iowa, and I think that builds momentum for him. And the enthusiasm.
I agree. He'll be great to defeat, but I mean, I don't want to be put in this forced labor camp. I mean, I don't want to be ruled over by that piece of crap.
Alex, you and I have worked too hard to see Hillary go bye-bye. If Bernie can defeat her and keep her out of...
No, I hear you. It's creepy that a hardcore commie wants to put me in a forced relocation camp like Mao Zedong. I mean, this country, the fact that he has 10,000 people and 20,000 in Iowa at events, I mean, Drudge has an image of it up on his site. That's scary, man.
Yeah. Alex knows what he's talking about, sure. Apparently he does know the difference between social democracy and communism, and he thinks Bernie Sanders is like Mao Zedong. That's just helplessly stupid. Like, you're beyond anybody's attempts or efforts to bring you back to Earth. But then again, it's Alex Jones. He's probably been like that since roughly 1993. so I don't even know why I'm bothering here. But for those of you who don't know, Mao and his so-called Great Leap Forward, he ended up killing about 45 million people as a result of that. How many people has Bernie Sanders killed? That's right, zero. In fact, see, the policies that he's proposing, if you gave a fuck enough to listen to what he's saying, would actually do the opposite of kill people. It would quite literally save people. So, for example, in the United States of America, 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. Does Alex Jones give a fuck about those people? Is Alex Jones ranting against those people? No, he doesn't give a fuck about those people. And he's actively supporting candidates who also don't give a fuck about those people, who sit idly by while 45,000 people die. Bernie Sanders is trying to fix that. Furthermore, Bernie Sanders is trying to fix this thing called unnecessary wars. You know, he doesn't want us invading random countries and killing civilians. That wacky idea. So again, that would be the opposite of killing people. It would be saving people. It would be improving humanity. I know it's very hard to make these distinctions. At least it is for Alex Jones. And Mao was an out-and-out authoritarian. And Bernie Sanders is anything but authoritarian. You know what an authoritarian is? Now, they can come from the right wing or the left wing, but an authoritarian is somebody who wants to get involved in your personal life and wants to dictate all that stuff. And Bernie Sanders, as evidenced by his position on virtually every single social issue, is the opposite of an authoritarian. He would be he would be on the libertarian left as opposed to the authoritarian left, which means he's fine with you. Hey, personal liberty and freedom. You want to smoke marijuana? Go right ahead and smoke marijuana. Hey, you're a woman and you don't want the state getting involved in your uterus? By all means, you can make your own decisions. See, again, this would be the opposite of somebody like Mao, who wanted to control everything about everybody's personal life and wanted fierce loyalty to him. You know, Bernie Sanders would not shut down people in the media who are opposed to him. You must be mistaking him for, what's that guy's name again? Donald fucking Trump. Again, the thing is, Alex Jones is a moron. He doesn't know anything about politics, okay? He gets out there and he has verbal diarrhea in front of everybody. This is the guy who's been making the same fucking claim since the 1990s. They haven't come true, and somehow people still listen to this jackass. Hey, buddy, why haven't I been shoved into a FEMA camp yet? Why haven't any of us been shoved into a FEMA camp yet? Why hasn't Agenda 21 from the UN taken over? Why haven't they banned golf course? Why haven't they shoved us in hobbit homes, which is literally what people who believe in Agenda 21 believe? Why haven't they banned cars? This is another thing that they say is going to happen under Agenda 21. You've been making the same fucking claims for decades. It hasn't come true. You know what that means? You are wrong. You are talking out of your ass. It makes no sense. So, but there he is, smugly, I don't have forced labor camps that Bernie's gonna be pushing me into. Right, I'm sure you can point me to the policy paper that Bernie has proposed where he says, on the second day in office, I will be pushing for these hard labor camps because I am pro-slavery. He's just a joke. And finally, I still can't get over how obnoxious and arrogant and dumb people are when they mock and scoff, and they're like, Bernie Sanders, yeah, we want him to win because the Republicans are going to win overwhelmingly in the general. Do you even do polls, bro? Do you not know how those things work? Bernie is beating the Republican front runner, Donald Trump, who has a tremendous lead in the national polls. Bernie's beating him by 13 points. That's a landslide, bitch. But again, this is somebody who's ignorant. He bathes in his own ignorance. He loves it. So you just go out there, make wild, obnoxious claims, which, by the way, are also kind of dangerous because you don't have the most stable followers, and perhaps one of them is going to take action, assuming Bernie Sanders is like Mao Zedong. You just say this shit, move along, no consequences whatsoever, and still dupe over people who follow you. Which brings me to my final point here, which is that Alex Jones, who claims to be the most anti-establishment guy, and everything is a conspiracy. He's actively kneecapping the chances of the most anti-establishment candidate, the one who's most against the bankers and the billionaires and the multinational corporations that have bought our elections and basically run our government, the one who's most against them. Alex missed that, you know, the one guy who's fighting them. Alex somehow, who sees a conspiracy in everything, he doesn't see the giant conspiracy of the establishment against Bernie Sanders. He sides with the establishment against the anti-establishment character. That tells you something about how intelligent Alex Jones is, doesn't it? A guy who sees a conspiracy in absolutely everything except when there's a real conspiracy there. I don't see it. And also, I mean, not to branch off into a side rant here, but it's the same with religion. Alex Jones is a Christian. Please, allow me to laugh away. Everything's a conspiracy. But the Jewish zombie who died and then came back to life, and he's three people, but he's really one person, and he flies bodily to heaven, and he comes back down, and there's the parting of the Red Sea, and the talking snake, and the burning bush, all that stuff, totally true. Everything else a conspiracy. Okay. All right, let's go to Phil Robertson. Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty was on the campaign trail for Ted Cruz. As usual, he took his comments way too far. Let's watch.
When a fellow like me looks at the landscape and sees the depravity, the perversion, redefining marriage and telling us that marriage is now between a man and a woman, come on, Alva, it's nonsense. It is evil. It's wicked. It's sinful. And they want us to swallow it, you say. We have to run this bunch out of Washington, D.C. We have to rid the earth of them. Get them out of there. Ted Cruz loves God. He loves James Madison, and he's a strict constitutionalist.
None of you are strict constitutionalists. The first sentence of the First Amendment is about secularism. It says the government cannot establish a religion. That's exactly what you want to do. So spare me your bullshit. You don't know anything about U.S. history. But moving on from that, did you catch the most important point there? He said we need to, quote, rid the earth of them, talking about the LGBT movement and people who are in favor of LGBT rights. We have to rid the earth of them. Rid the earth of them. Rid the earth of them. No, that's not violent at all. No, 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 no. You have a lot more in common with genocidal fascist maniacs than you do with your space fairy, Jesus Christ. How ridiculous are these guys? He's so sure he's right, and he's so sure he's the good guy, because he's so moral and religious, that he might just have to do a genocide to prove how right he is, to rid the earth of the scum, you know, the evil LGBT people and LGBT rights activists. Oh, rid the earth of them. They're so bad, they don't even deserve to walk on the same earth as us. Am I right? This is the same guy who, by the way, in a conversation with Sean Hannity about how to deal with ISIS, he said flat out, we ought to kill them or we ought to convert them. Kill or convert. That is only literally what ISIS says also. Congratulations, you're Christian ISIS. And now you solidify that even more. A guy like this with power, I mean, it's what nightmares are made of. He's an authoritarian. He's a theocrat. He is Christian ISIS. Now, thankfully, you know, he's not running for any position here, but he is endorsing somebody who's running and has Ted Cruz come out and said, look, hey, he's an old dude, he's a little goofy and off his rocker. He said things, he doesn't really mean them, you know, it is what it is. But, of course, I don't believe in what this guy's saying. He's saying rid the earth of LGBT activists. That's crazy. No, in fact, Ted Cruz, directly after these comments, he came out, he gave his speech, and he said the following, quote, how about Phil Robertson? What an extraordinary human being. I mean, listen, God makes every one of us unique, but some are uniquer than others. What a voice Phil has to speak out for the love of Jesus. Oh, yes, the love of genocide. I mean, Jesus. What a joyful, cheerful, unapologetic voice of truth Phil Robertson is. What part of doing a genocide of LGBT activists is truth, Ted? Please, explain for me. For those of you who saw his victory speech in Iowa yesterday, what did he say? Almost everything he said was about God. God, 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 God. Yes, Ted. Allow me to say, in response to your showing of your true theocratic colors, Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! I think you'd fit in more in Saudi Arabia or maybe Iran or somewhere like that, and perhaps you should move there. Okay, let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break, and it'll be Carly Fiorina. So Carly Fiorina has made opposition to abortion one of the main platforms in her campaign. She's gone on unhinged rants against Planned Parenthood, where she repeats and doubles down on debunked claims. She did it in debates. She's done it in interviews. You name it, she's everywhere saying they're selling baby parts for profit, even though that's not true. And fact checkers have had a field day with these, again, now debunked so-called sting videos from right-wing hacks. Well, today we get a heaping dose of hypocrisy about Carly Fiorina. According to corporate documents revealed by Inside Story, quote, Fiorina, a staunch opponent of abortion, made at least $83,000 serving on the board of directors of Merck & Co. at a time when the pharmaceutical company was producing vaccines using fetal stem cell lines derived from aborted fetuses. During Fiorina's tenure on the board, anti-abortion groups had asked Merck to stop producing such vaccines, and the company had refused. Whoopsie-daisies! Now, Fiorina is such a fucking hypocrite that there's a chance that she was literally in the room during conversations about how to respond to said anti-abortion activists. Or she, at the very least, knew other people who were in the company, who served on the board, who knew the deal, and said, yeah, fuck off. This is science. This is medicine. It makes sense. There's no pain involved in getting these fetuses. They're all, they're not late term. So what are you complaining about? This is progress. We need this. We need this to cure diseases. At the time, apparently, no problem with it whatsoever. And when she ran for Senate in 2010, her position wasn't so harsh on abortion. But now that she's running for the Republican nomination, all of a sudden, she's so angry about abortion that she made $83,000 from it when she worked when she was on the board of a company that profited from this exact kind of research and this exact kind of process to use in vaccines. Now, understand, guys. This is hypocrisy I can believe in, because I would rather her actions line up with the sane people than with the insane people who pretend like abortion is another Holocaust and all the abortions in the U.S. are late term when virtually none of them are late term. Listen to this, quote, the stem cell lines in use today are used primarily in Merck's MMR and MMRV vaccines, the only measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines in the United States. Guys, very simply, these vaccines save lives. That's not an open question. That's not an opinion. That's not up in the air. That's a concrete fact. It's a fact. We need it. It makes sense. So that's the right side to be on. But perhaps, Carly, your rhetoric should match up with your actual record on this, and you should acknowledge that this isn't some sort of moral abomination, and you're just pretending it is because you really want to get elected. Well, Carly, how did that work out in Iowa? Answer, not well at all. Okay, I got to take a break here. When we come back, Sarah Palin did an interview with the Today Show, and it derailed quickly. And then Ted Cruz's dad takes it to another level with theocracy yet again. And we got anti-porn politicians, because that is just such a popular platform to run on. Am I right? All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
never stop. When a dropkick gets toxic, trouble like you're building a mosh pit. I'm rusted, and that's the only way that we rock shit.
Alright, we're back, guys. We got. I'm really not even like halfway done with the stories I prepped. What else is new? All right, Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin did an interview with the Today Show, and it derailed when they asked her a real question about some recent silly comments that she made.
Something you mentioned on the campaign trail, which is the arrest of your son, Track, and you talked about it, and then you mentioned PTSD, and you said that President Obama may be to blame for some of the PTSD that's out there.
That.
Well, I wanted to, let's take it piece by piece. What exactly did you mean?
Let's start piece by piece by you guys brought me here to talk about Iowa politics and the caucus tonight, not to talk about my kids, and that was a promise. But as things go in the world of media, you guys don't always keep your promises, evidently. I never blamed President Obama. What I have blamed President Obama in doing, though, is this level of disrespect for the United States military that is made manifest in gutting budgets, in not trying to beef it up and let our military do the job that they are trained to do, and in specific issues that we're talking about that are so hot today, specifically, let's get in there and let's utterly destroy ISIS, as we know our United States military can do, yet we have a commander-in-chief who seems to kind of want to kowtow and allow the enemy to be poking at us, and that's unacceptable to most Americans, certainly to me.
Do you regret the prevailing on that day of the endorsement?
What did I say that is offensive?
That you
exactly
seem to lay it at the feet of the president.
I don't regret any comment that I made because I didn't lay the PTSD at the foot of the president. I did say, though, that there is, and suggested very adamantly, that there is much more that our commander-in-chief can do to prove that he respects our troops and will let them do their job. But, no, if you guys have a specific quote, it allows the media to be more credible if you guys will tell me exactly what you're talking about, and then I can address
that. In terms of credibility, I just want to make sure, there were no specific promises made about content of the interview, only that this would be your first interview since you endorsed Donald Trump.
Well, I was told that this interview is about the caucus tonight in Iowa, and right on, who will it be to put America back on the right track and restore constitutional government that we are lacking today and that we so need? And I said, right on, let me go talk about that, sure.
And I think we talked about that quite a bit. Governor Palin, thank you so much.
Here's your specific quote, Sarah. They come back hardened. They come back wondering if there is that respect for what it is that their fellow soldiers and airmen and every other member of the military so sacrificially have given to this country. And that starts at the top. So when my own son is going through what he goes through after coming back, I can certainly relate with other families who kind of feel these ramifications of some PTSD and some of the woundedness that our soldiers do return with. And it makes me realize more than ever, it is now or never, for the sake of America's finest, that we have that commander-in-chief who will respect them and honor them. Our vets, and you deserve a commander-in-chief who will respect what it is that our forces go through and would never leave them behind. You did exactly what they're saying you did. It's beyond clear. You blamed President Obama for your son, who, by the way, was arrested for domestic abuse. But naturally, in your eyes, he's your little baby, so he's the victim because PTSD from war. And the answer in her mind is not, hey, we probably shouldn't have done this unnecessary war. The answer is, blame Obama. Blame Obama because people have PTSD in wars that he didn't start. Now, don't get me wrong, I've gone after Obama pretty aggressively because I think he's far too hawkish, but that ain't the argument she's making. She's saying, I don't know, just the Democrats blame Obama for everything. All of a sudden, the people who love to yelp and scream and shriek about personal responsibility are like, my son beat the ass of his wife, how can I blame the Democrats? How can I blame Obama? Please. Okay, the two most important facts that you need to know about this absurd claim from Sarah Palin is, number one, Obama did address mental health care. You know how we did it? through Obamacare, the piece of legislation that you so vehemently oppose that you talk about repealing it all the fucking time. So don't tell me he doesn't care about PTSD. He doesn't care about mental health. He indeed does. He's the one that's actually done some reform in that field. Now, again, I think Obamacare was too weak a piece of legislation, but that's a separate conversation. At least he's in favor of something, and the Republicans are in favor of bupkis, nothing, ass cheeks, okay? And then the second fact is, Sarah, the Democrats tried to create 27 new VA clinics to fix this backlog that everybody's so concerned about. You know who blocked it? Your precious Republicans. So spare me your crocodile tears. Oh, the troops, the troops, the troops, the troops. They're being left behind. They're being left back. PTSD, this, that. Blame Obama. Even though it's the Republicans who blocked 27 new VA clinics, and on top of that, they pushed for a food stamp cut, which directly affected thousands of our veterans. Spare me your nonsense. And the main point here is, why are you getting so defensive, bro? Thou dost protest too much. You're getting defensive because you know you fucking said it and you can't defend it. So now, what do? When you can't defend it and you're a Republican? Play the victim! I was promised that you wouldn't ask me questions that are real questions that I can't answer. I was supposed to be here to talk about the caucus, and that's it. Why are you victimizing me? All I did was say that President Obama is responsible for my son beating the ass of his wife, but why are you victimizing me? Why are you victimizing me? Nobody's victimizing you. You quite literally victimized the president for blaming him for not only PTSD, but your son beating the ass of his wife, and you're averting personal responsibility, as you ironically claim the opposite, that you're the party of personal responsibility, and, you know, you're the party that cares more about the vets. None of it is true. You're an absolute joke. The best way to actually care for these vets is not only to give them help on the back end when it comes to mental health and stuff, but don't send them into stupid wars that are unwinnable to begin with. And in this segment, you did the same thing. You said, yeah, no, the problem, we need to send the troops to defeat ISIS, that we should unleash the troops and let them do the thing, and then you're going to complain when they come back and they're not right in the head. How about you don't send them in there to do that? How about you let countries in the region take care of that? And how about we prevent PTSD from happening, and then if it does happen anyway, we give them the care they need, all things you oppose. All right, now, we go to Ted Cruz and Rafael Cruz, his dad here. Ted Cruz's dad, Rafael, sat down for an interview with a ridiculous religious talk show, which probably gets negative 8 viewers. You're welcome, guys, for playing this little clip and getting you the most viewers you've ever had in your life. And he made this insane comment.
I would assume, you correct me, that you and your family, and especially Ted, have been called to run for president. How do you pray for him?
Well, I'll tell you, the decision to run for president of Ted was a long decision. Ted and his wife and family, they spent 6 months in prayer, just seeking the will of God as to what to do. And that culminated one time that the whole family was together, and even his senior staff, we were attending a church service all together at First Baptist Church of Houston, where he's a member. And after church, we went up to the pastor's office. We spent 2 hours on our knees seeking God's will about this decision. And it was there where Heidi said a word that, I believe it was just inspiration from God. And she said, seek God's face, not God's hand. And that was just as if there was a presence of the Holy Spirit in the room. And that, you know, we all were at all, and Ted, just all that it came out of his mouth, he said, here am I, Lord, use me. Here am I, Lord, I surrender to whatever your will for my life is. And it was at that time that he felt the peace about running for president of the United States.
This guy is a fucking lunatic. He's a lunatic. Imagine for a second a Jew said that. Imagine. God wants me to run. God wants me to run. I heard from the Holy Spirit. I heard from Yahweh himself. And I'm just fulfilling prophecy here in doing what is the divine will of our Creator. Imagine a Muslim said that. I was speaking to Allah, and he told me that I am the chosen one to lead this nation. Everybody's fucking hair would be on fire. Theocracy, Sharia law, extremism, crazy, insane, maniac. Ted Cruz's dad says this. Crickets. I don't hear anything. Why? Because we go with kid gloves on the Christian theocrats, because the Christian theocrats are, you know, Christians are a majority in the U.S., 70% in the U.S. You have anywhere from 25 to 40% of the Republican base are flat-out theocrats, and they want biblical law implemented. In fact, that's too low, because we cover the story. It's over 50% of the Republican base says we should get rid of the Constitution and put in biblical law. So since they are the most numerous in the country, people just, you know, kid gloves, let it slide, no big deal. We hear this every other day, whether it's from John Hagee or Pat Robertson or some other fundamentalist Christian maniac in Congress, Steve King, you know, you name it, Rick Santorum. So we're just, yeah, no, whatever, it's his dad, and his dad says that they prayed together, and they were say they heard the Holy Spirit, and they were fucking nearly speaking in tongues in the room, and God wants them to run. This isn't something you look past. They're giving you an indication of what would happen if Ted is in power. If Ted truly believes, as he very well might, that God has anointed him, he's not going to accept any dissent. Hey, God's on my side. He ain't on your side. www.stepthefuckaside.com and let me implement my agenda. I'll do it by any means necessary because I have the Almighty on my side and you're just in the way. I'm fulfilling divine prophecy. Does this sound like Saudi Arabia yet? It fucking should, okay? This is beyond unacceptable. If somebody said this and they're Muslim or Jewish, people would say this is an extremist. If somebody said this and they're like Hindu, people would try to put them in a fucking mental institution. If somebody said that and they're Hindu in the U.S., you know, Vishnu told me I need to, what the fuck are you talking about? I mean, you may as well take out Jesus and God here and put in, you know, whatever, Lord of the Rings characters, Harry Potter characters, or Pokemon, or different fictional characters from, or put in the Greek gods or the Roman gods, and everybody would be like, what the fuck are you saying? I spoke to Zeus. Zeus wants me to run. Like, what does that mean? You're saying things that make no sense. There's no evidence for this. This isn't based in reality. You're a narcissist with a God complex who literally thinks God is talking to you and your son. Unbelievable. Now, keep in mind, men, while we live in a country where this happens, a guy's running for president, he just won the Iowa caucus. His dad says shit like this. You have atheists, on the other hand. They're ruled out by more people than any other group in the country. People are more likely to vote for a woman, somebody in the LGBT community. Atheist is at the very bottom. Now, look, it's possible to override that if the right atheist happens to come along. And, you know, the same way with Obama. People were gung-ho about voting for a black candidate, but then they thought the right one came along, and they were like, okay, no, fuck that. Let's vote for this guy. But the bottom line is there's still this innate bigotry and this sense of you're the other, you're bad, you're wrong, when it's a rational group like atheists that give a shit about evidence. But then this guy, whose dad is like, yeah, we got a direct line to Jesus. Win the Iowa caucus. Quick, God spoke him. Allow him to win. Allahu Akbar to the Cruz family yet again. I keep saying it. I say it almost every story about them, but I say it because it's true. You would fit in much better in Saudi Arabia or perhaps Iran than you would in the United States of America. We are a secular government. The first sentence of the First Amendment sets up a secular government. You cannot establish a religion in the United States of America. In other words, you get it exactly wrong. And you're delusional if you think you're talking to God. As the great old saying goes, If God, if you talk to God, you're religious. If you think God talks to you, you're a schizophrenic, and you probably need medication. Okay. Now let's get to an important story about women's rights. Should be getting a lot more coverage from everywhere. Okay. There's a women's advocacy group called Equality Now, and they called out 44 governments around the world for their abhorrent treatment of women and their anti-woman laws in a new report of theirs. So I want to share some of this with you because it's really, really eye-opening. In fact, I'd go as far as to say it's worse than I thought and more pervasive than I thought. And this shows you that, comes to the issue of feminism, it's obvious and it's clear that certain versions of feminism, third wave feminism, for example, you can say is extreme and it's not based in facts and all this stuff. But traditional feminism is still desperately needed in the world today. And the idea that all feminists are bad or wrong or, you know, misguided, that's just not true. So let me go ahead and give you some of the information here, and then you can make up your own mind. So India, in 2013, passed a law that said, quote, sexual intercourse or sexual acts by a man with his own wife, the wife not being under 15 years of age, is not rape. So in 2013, they wrote into law that marital rape is not a thing. They legalized marital rape. Seems a little backwards to me. All right, more. A similar law remains on the books in Singapore, where marital rape is accessible so long as the girl is over 13 years old. In the Bahamas, rape is also not considered if there is a marriage and the girl is at least 14 years old. So again, if you're in a marriage and, you know, you're the wife and you're not in the mood and you say, look, not tonight for reasons X, Y, and Z, whatever, the man has the right to override you and you have no legal recourse. They can even violently rape you and nope. What are you going to do? You're in a marriage. What did you expect? You're his property, basically. He can do whatever the fuck he wants to you. All right, more. In Malta and Lebanon, crimes are literally erased once the offender marries the victim. So, I kid you not, you can kidnap a woman and then marry her, and it's totally legal. This is so beyond the pale, it's like we're living in an episode of The Twilight Zone. In Nigeria, violence, quote, by a husband for the purpose of correcting his wife is considered lawful. Domestic violence legal. You can beat the shit out of your wife. And then as long as you say to authorities, bitch stepped out. What am I going to do? I got to put her back in place. I got to put her back in line. Oh, no, that's cool. As long as it's for corrective purposes. If it's not for corrective purposes, then maybe we have a problem. But the guy's always going to say it's for corrective purposes. And he's going to get away with it. What are you going to do? It's like she's your property, basically. This is the mindset that we're talking about here. All right, more. In China and in Madagascar, women are only allowed to work in the fields that men say are okay. Now, some of them, they would argue, well, this is for their own protection, and this is hard labor, and this is this, and this is that. But there are also fields where it's not even for, like, personal protection or whatever. And furthermore, shouldn't they just have the right to choose themselves? And look, if they don't meet the standards, I'm not saying you scrap the standards. Everybody should, have to hold themselves up to the same standard. But if they can meet the standards, why the fuck would you disqualify them solely based on the fact that they have a vagina? That doesn't seem logical to me. In Russia, they're banned from hard trades and 456 types of work, including driving trains, being a carpenter, and being a sailor. I don't know how gender plays into that, but they've decided, no women, fuck them. In Saudi Arabia, the laundry list is endless here, but I'll just give you a few. Women can't drive, and women are, of course, forced to cover up if they are female citizens of Saudi Arabia. In the Congo, quote, a wife is obliged to live with her husband and follow him wherever he sees fit to reside. She also cannot appear in civil court or sell or undertake commitments without her husband's go-ahead. If the husband agrees but later changes his mind, he can revoke that privilege. This makes it almost impossible for a woman to open her own business or do any above-the-table dealings independently. More, in Yemen, a wife is legally required to obey her husband. She can't leave the house without permission, and marital rape is legal. And a Sudanese law stipulates that a husband has the right to, first of all, be taken care of and amicably obeyed, and B, to have the wife preserve herself and his property. So on a plain face reading of that, you can say if you know, you're in Sudan, you're male, you have a wife, you can say, hey, you haven't kept yourself up nicely. You ate too much, you put on a little weight. You know, I'm not happy with how you look and how you act, so I am going to take legal action against you. He's well within his rights to do that. And you have to, quote, amicably obey him. So whatever the husband says, hey, you got to follow me, bitch, because I say so, because you're basically my property. This is quite literally treating women like they're dogs, like they're animals. This is not treating them as equals by any stretch of the imagination. Then we move to Tunisia and the UAE, where sons inherit twice as much as daughters by law. Stay classy. In Egypt, a woman can be put to death for cheating. In Israel, where marriages and divorces between Jewish citizens are under rabbinical law, women can't decide to leave a marriage. They need a man's permission. How lovely. In Iran, female testimony counts less than male testimony, and it's illegal to violate the proper dress code. And in the U.S., a child who's born out of wedlock to an American father with a foreign mother has a much harder time getting citizenship than the reverse. So a foreign father and a U.S. mother. So we have a double standard that's baked into the law. And Justice Ginsburg dissented about this case in 1998 and said the following, quote, the law at issue might have made custody or support the relevant criterion. Instead, it treats mothers one way and fathers another, shaping government policy to fit and reinforce the stereotype or historic pattern. So there you have it, man. You have this endless list of women being treated in a way that's fundamentally unequal, and it's unacceptable. And there are a variety of reasons for it. So in some cases, you can say this is because of fundamentalist religious ideology. There are plenty of cases here of Muslim theocracies where they implement these laws against women, and some of it is based on, in some cases, the Hadith, in some cases, the Quran. In other examples, you're just talking about a culture of misogyny and quite literally patriarchy that goes back for generations that's divorced from religion but tied to practices that have been around for a very long time. And in each and every single case, allow me to say this, that I don't give a fuck what your reasoning is. You are wrong. Women should be treated 100% equally under law. Now, that doesn't mean that we force there to be equal outcomes. Like in every business, you need 50% men, 50% women. You need to tell women what their role is in society, and you tell them, hey, you need to act more like a man because I say so. No. The idea is women should have equal protection under the law, so equal rights, and then freedom of choice. So they could choose if they want to be a housewife, and I'm not going to judge them. Or they can choose to be a CEO, and I'm not going to judge them. But as of right now, we're so incredibly far away from that, that it's crazy. And it blows your fucking mind. It's even worse than I thought it was. And what we need is a global movement and a global revolution of ideas and concepts where we say, for women's rights, non-negotiable, off the table, these are in stone. They are human rights. Women's rights are human rights. You need the same thing on the LGBT front. You need the same thing on the secularism front, that people have a right to not be ruled by theocrats that they don't agree with. And you go down the list here. There's a lot of work to do. And, you know, if you're a liberal and you're getting lazy or lackadaisical and you somehow think that we've gotten far enough already, we got a lot more work to do, and this is an eye-opening example of that. Let me give you one or two more here. Hopefully I have time. Utah State Senator Todd Wheeler proposed a bill to declare pornography a public health crisis and a national epidemic. So he says the following here. I have read books. Oh, really? What books? And I have experts tell me that pornography is more difficult to overcome than cocaine. I want to take on the pornography epidemic that is harming the citizens of Utah and the nation. These are scientific facts, just like global warming. Agree to disagree. First of all, I like the assumption. The assumption is just porn bad. People see porn is bad. How about no? How about typically if you, you know, relieve sexual tension and you have no other outlet to do so, that's probably a good thing. Your head's going to be more clear. You're going to be less violent, less aggressive. After people orgasm, they seem fairly and happy and lovely and joyous. Pre-orgasm, maybe it's a little bit of a different situation. I'm sure you've all been around repressed, pent-up people. They're more whiny, a little bit more out of touch and focused on their own issues. So I don't get it, man. It's like if you're on the far right wing, you want to wage a war against biology and nature. It's like getting angry at people for breathing or peeing. It's just, it is what it is. Nothing can be more natural. You know how we got to 7 billion people on the planet? By fucking and sucking and doing a lot of that stuff. Now, in polite society, oh, you can't say that. Oh, don't talk about that. But literally you watching, listening to this live or watching this on YouTube, you're here because your mom and dad fucked. They fucked. It's a gross thought, right? But it happened. Because this is the world we live in. I mean, it's in your genes. It's in your DNA. It is your biology. It is innate. It is inherent. But these guys are like, no, me no likey. So I will wage a war against it. Well, you are waging a war against humanity if you do that. So let's understand that. They're so ashamed of being human. I'm not. I'm proud of it. I'm happy about it. I enjoy life. I enjoy consciousness. I enjoy my brief, you know, flash on this earth in the grand scheme of things. These guys try to come up with rigid rules that make no sense to try to oppress others and themselves, and they never live up to it, which leads to my next point. Quote, along with its reputation for being one of the most conservative states in the U.S., Utah also has the dubious distinction of being one of the country's largest consumers of adult entertainment. No shit, because you're playing pretend. No, we're better than that. We can override that. We don't have sexual urges. We're like conservative and religious and Mormon and stuff, and we're above that. And then they turn around and beat off, because that's what people do. What is it? I think it's Pakistan or some super anti-gay country that leads the world in viewing gay porn. You repressed it. You pushed it under. It is unnatural. It's going to come out in weird ways. Ooh, perhaps the wrong phrase to use in describing this story. But you guys get the point. Stop being ashamed of being human. As long as we're talking about consenting adults, go nuts, man. Enjoy yourself. Have fun. Don't be a ridiculous person who lives a life based on false assumptions that the most human, natural thing is wrong and immoral. No, I would actually argue the opposite. It's moral. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. Still got some great stuff to get to. I missed a story about fucking a vacuum cleaner in Saudi Arabia.
Huh?
And I missed a Michelle Bachmann end time story. All this stuff will be covered tomorrow. All right. Love you guys. I'll see you there. Meet me here, same time, same place. Peace.